Casey Herbert, here we are again. Tell the people what's going on.
It's not just me, Max.
Oh, no?
There's also the entire population of Christchurch, New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you speak a little bit closer to the mic? Because, you know, people have been noticing that you're actually been speaking closer to the mic these days.
Well, you don't move it anymore. Usually you move it away from me when we start, and then you blame me for not speaking loud enough.
Oh, no. Here it comes. Yeah. Online, live. The big breakup.
Yeah. All right. So what's going on?
Well, I want to actually tell you that not this Thursday, but the next Thursday, the Kaiser Report will have Captain Paul Watson.
Oh, that's a good... He's fantastic, Captain Paul Watson. What's he do?
Honey.
What?
What's going on with you?
Everything is good.
Well, Captain Paul Watson, you know, has the Sea Shepherd, a successful campaign against the Japanese whaling fleet.
Yeah.
He cut their whale catch by 50% last year.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger deflation than we see in the global economy.
Well, yeah. You know, he has always said from the beginning that his objective is economic, not moral.
Yeah.
The morality is a byproduct of his economic campaign. It just happens to have, it plays moral dividends. His economic campaign pays moral dividends, but his campaign is put together in such a way as to think about economics first. So he reasoned that the way to stop whaling would be to stop the way that other environmental groups go about doing it, which is to say that they put up a lot of signs, they get on the media, they do a lot of lawsuits. His technique was to simply go to the where they're doing the whaling and to shut them down, with the theory being that if the whaling operation is no longer economic for them, they will be forced out of the business and they won't be whaling anymore. As a byproduct of this, you can say, yes, well, morally, we had the high ground. But that's not the primary reason. And this is what I've been trying to tell people for 10 years now, that when you enter the activist arena, forget the placards, forget the lawsuits, forget the die-ins and the colored paints and the giant puppets and the protests, the various groups. It's all meaningless. You just have to figure out where the competitor is that you're campaigning against, find out what their economic vulnerabilities are, and then hit that spot. That's the way to do it. Otherwise, you know, the same thing came up on Alex Jones' show last week. Stacey, we were talking about the InfoWars, which is the name of his site, and information wars. People think that what this means is that you get information to people because the corporate media is blocking information because people are uninformed. That's not what information wars means at all. Information war means that you understand that information has been weaponized and you have organizations, technology companies, and media companies that flood the public domain with information, misinformation, mostly, and just reams and reams of information as a way to carpet bomb the public domain with lots of information. A lot of it is misinformation. So the only way to fight the info wars is to fight back with your own information cannons to flood the public domain with information that serves your purposes. So this is what information war is all about. Information as a commodity, not as a something that has value in itself.
You know, I actually have a little idea about this. I want to see what your thoughts are on this. Now, WikiLeaks has released over 90,000 documents from the Afghanistan war, boondoggle. And one of the things that emerges, one of the bits of information is that the intelligence agencies in America are just overwhelmed with information that they can't possibly understand it all because they're just collecting every single bit of information because of their perceived failure on 9/11. So now they just collect everything. But because of that, they're unable to see what information they have. So I was thinking, you know, a lot of people write, oh, WikiLeaks is a CIA front, blah, blah, blah. And then I actually thought about it and said, maybe it is. Maybe they're just looking for crowdsourcing, for people to look through the information for them and tell them what's there.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. In other words, that's the information as commodity. So there's a few different ways to look at this. Number one, the WikiLeaks is flooding the public domain with information. That's what an information warrior does. Number two, they are triggering a response from their enemy, the intelligence services. They have to dedicate services to this. They have to respond to this information. They have to counter with their own information. There's only so much. You see what happened when the WikiLeaks released the video of the Apache helicopters gunning down the innocent bystanders in Iraq a couple of months ago. The mainstream media had a choice to make. Either A, they would try to counter with a lot of information to flood back, or B, simply ignore it. So because they don't have the resources to flood back because of the credit crisis, their only choice was to ignore the situation.
Well, the population itself did a pretty good job of ignoring it or not being concerned. Because remember during the Vietnam War, the information was much more shocking. You know, the sort of photos and images had a much more shock value to the population. When the people saw or learned about, you know, the My Lai incident, for example, they were very appalled.
Yeah, well, the whole information in the media at the time was structured in a lot more, let's say, crude manner. In other words, television was really the only media outlet available at the time. It was one way. And for 20 or 30 years since the 1955, 1960 era, when modern television entered the living room, it was a real broadcast mechanism, and it became extremely trusted in that people, you know, for example, I grew up in the 60s, and I took the television on as a sibling, which is a different experience than my other brothers and sisters. And I think this is the number one difference between us, even though we are in the same family and only a few years apart. I'm the last of the kids in the family, and I actually took the television on as a sibling, and it really, we grew up together as my brother, the television. So it became extremely trusted in those early years, and it left a very profound impact on the way I think. And so when they started showing the body bags in the Vietnam War, it was a real shock, and it caused a social revolution in America. It caused the youth revolution in America. But it was because of the monopoly that TV had and the fact that TV was trusted without any question.
Yes, but with that trust, of course, many point to the moment that the war was absolutely lost and the U.S. had to leave Vietnam was when Walter Cronkite, wasn't it Walter Cronkite that asked, haven't we lost, what are we doing there? He asked on television.
Yes. Walter Cronkite started to question the war. Nixon famously said, if I've lost Walter Cronkite, I've lost the people, the American people. But then you had a period of when corporations realized that they needed to control television more because they couldn't let the next war go down in flames because of the truth that was being broadcast on the broadcast mechanism, the television. So then there was a need to control television a lot more stringently. And this brought in a period of, which was interesting because it's explored in a film called, that film with Ray Fiennes, Quiz Show, which I believe is a Robert Redford directed film. He talks about the way television went through a period that corporations replaced news with things like quiz shows. So this was the beginning of an inundation on television with things like the Newlywed Game, the Dating Game, quiz shows, junk TV we recognize today. And they started to squeeze out news, CBS, Edward R. Murrow type of news, another topic. Oh, yeah, we'll be back in just a few seconds here, so don't go away. Truth About Markets, New Zealand, Max and Stacey. We're back, and we're talking about television history, television, broadcast television. Another film that explores this, of course, is Good Night and Good Luck, which was a film exploring the Edward R. Murrow story and the fact that CBS News, powerhouse in news, got squeezed out by the junk TV. And this was all needed to make sure that the TV's impact as a broadcaster of truth and news was diluted, because they simply couldn't... They couldn't have the risk of starting a war someplace in East Asia or somewhere around the world, and then having their plans thwarted by having actual journalists in the field reporting back to the broadcast news. Now, this was the story up until the internet came along, and the internet once again put the news in front of people's face in a big way, and it cut severely into. The ability of the Bush administration to begin to really continue on with impunity the canard that the invasion of Iraq had something to do with weapons of mass destruction. And we're seeing now the result of all of the internet activity resulting in people like Tony Blair now looks like he's going to go up for war crimes, because you had the new coalition co-deputy Nick Clegg say that the Iraq war was illegal. He said this in the House of Commons. You've got ample...
At the dispatch box. But he says he was speaking in a personal capacity.
Right. You've got ample evidence now that the invasion was illegal, that it was pure war crimes. There's more evidence to suggest that the perpetrators were sick. They had psychosexual issues, that they glorified these videos of Abu Ghraib prisoners being violated. And this was really the main reason why they made the invasion. Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld should be in a hospital and under severe medication. They're very, very ill, psychological, mental misfits. And so these issues are now all coming out. So the WikiLeaks today... flooding the airwaves, information war, tens of thousands of documents. That's what an information war looks like. That's what it's all about. It's flooding information back and forth. Information as a commodity, not information as a delivery mechanism for truth and justice, because truth and justice have no value in today's society. They've been weaned, they've been diluted down to having parts of one per five quadrillion. There's no value to truth and justice. It's just a war of information back and forth. And so InfoWars, this is what we were talking about.
Yes, that's what I was positing this possible theory that it's some of these intelligence agencies themselves who have so much data. The NSA itself, the National Security Agency in America, they collect 1.8 billion emails per day.
Right.
So how are they possibly, there are not enough, there are only, 7 billion humans on Earth.
Yeah.
Maybe they could each read 6 emails a day.
Read these emails, obviously. It's all fed into a database, and the database is programmed with algorithms.
I understand that. That's true. Now, at some point, they need to have human beings look at it and see if the words mean anything. Because, a computer is never going to be able to tell the subtext of what a human being is expressing emotionally and passionately and psychologically. That's what I'm saying, is perhaps one way to use WikiLeaks, whether or not WikiLeaks itself understands this, is that the CIA could release the documents they have in order to get the population at large to do the work for them for free. So the population at large would look at the documents with the mind that, wow, this is information from the CIA or an intelligence services. I'm going to look at it with a suspicious mind. And then they start writing about it on forum boards. I saw this email between Joe Bag of Donuts A and Joe Bag of Donuts B, and this is what I think it means.
Right. There needs to be another site that goes with WikiLeaks, which is for some kind of wiki forum board that allows the people analyzing the WikiLeaks documents to discuss the documents outside of the eyes of the intelligence community. Otherwise, what will happen is exactly what you described. Everyone will examine these documents as an open source exercise. They'll identify the 5 or 6 pages that are really incendiary, and then the major media will go to work in discrediting those 5 or 6 pages, and in 5 or 6 days, the whole thing will be brushed under the carpet.
But it's also another way to get the population who think they're not involved in the surveillance state. They think they're not involved in like an East German sort of situation of spying on your neighbors. that you actually get involved thinking you're coming via a cool, interesting, you know, you're being an independent kind of person out there. And you're looking at these secret documents from the CIA, and then you tell them what is there.
Right. Well, this is the problem we've identified with, let's say, environmental groups who go to ExxonMobil and they say, here are the five things you're doing wrong. We've done all the research. We've got the lawyers. We've identified five things that you're not telling the public about. It's non-disclosed. It's a huge risk to the environment. And all ExxonMobil does is buy insurance against those five things. And then to pay for the insurance, they lower their operating standards and they cause more environmental damage before had they even shown up.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, we were talking about propaganda before in this last weekend show. So I'm just saying that this could be a very clever, advanced form of propaganda, of an advanced form of tyranny, where you don't understand that you are participating in the police surveillance state, that you have no idea. You think you're being independent and groovy and cool by looking at this data. I'm just saying that's an advanced form of police state, that you think you're doing it freely. You think you're being a cool, clever, hip person who's down with the people, you know, an anarchist and a revolutionary out in the street. But because that's what people, you know, it's an advanced form of police state, because people don't want to be told that we live in a police state here, spy on your neighbor and tell me, otherwise I'm going to, you know, kill your family or make your, you know, throw you in a gulag. It's more of an advanced thing where you think you're not in a police state. You think you're not in a gulag. You think you're not turning in your neighbor.
That's right.
Okay. So, and what else is going on?
Well, we got what's on Bloomberg today. BP said they're going to replace Hayward, the British guy, with a guy named Dudley who's got an American accent.
Yep. So yeah, that's all it takes.
Yeah. Yeah, all you need is someone with an American accent. So in other words, instead of saying that the Gulf of Mexico is toxic and won't recover ever, and we committed an act of ecological holocaust in your backyard and your government laid down and did nothing in a British accent, and which infuriated people, the exact same information will be delivered with an American accent, and everyone will say, well, okay, that's okay, you know, but boy, they're all right.
It's so Leo Straussian, it's just so condescending. That this is, I mean, they openly discuss this, that an American accent will go down better with the American peasants.
Yeah.
You know, it's right there in the news, and all the, read any of the articles from any newspaper, these people are openly saying, like, the American people are simpletons and they need an American accent in order to accept the propaganda.
Right. Meanwhile, okay, this guy Hayward, he's getting a $23 million bonus, and he'll be kicked upstairs, so probably made a knight or a lord, and he'll be celebrated as a hero of the BP's attack on America's infrastructure and ecology. He's a hero in Britain and to BP. And he's making a huge amount of money because crime pays. What else we got here? You got, so anyway, the storm passed in the BP, and they are going to resume work on trying to cover up their massive crimes against humanity. So
all the EU banks pretty much passed the so-called stress test. And this is another, speaking of propaganda and perception molding, is they basically just looked at sovereign debt and what their risks were to that.
Right.
And then right before it, they did exactly what the FASB did in America, is they helped them basically via accounting tricks. They basically said that we only count the sovereign debt that is being traded that you have on your books, not the stuff that is being held to maturity.
Right.
So what they did is they just took all of their sovereign debt and said, okay, we're going to hold this to maturity, at least for this quarter.
Right. Okay. So this brings up an interesting. We'll talk about this in the final segment here, but it brings up an interesting new development in the Bank of International Settlement, the special drawing rights, and gold market, and how we're seeing the emergence of a new global currency to replace the dollar as a world reserve currency, and why that's necessary, and why these stress tests are harbinger of the new world order, as some call it. When we come back after this quick musical break. And this is Max and Stacy with Truth About Markets, Christchurch, New Zealand. So don't go away.
RDU 98.5.
No, it's the best station in New Zealand by far. All right, we're back. Christchurch, New Zealand, Max and Stacey. Okay, so the stress test for the banks in Eurozone, they, of course, it was an accounting fraud. They only looked at one part of their books, and they didn't look at the part of the books with all the debt. So according to the parts of the balance sheet where there was no debt, their conclusion was that there wasn't a lot of debt. So now the fact is that there's still a huge amount of debt, and it's imploding, and it's a deflationary spiral, and there's a global credit crunch, and jobs are disappearing, and people are dying from starvation. And, of course, if the peasants die, who will do the work of the peasants? Remember, on Wall Street, there's a saying, shear, don't slaughter. You just want to pick people's pockets. You don't want to kill them because you don't want to have to do the work that they're doing. So now the people are dying because they picked their pockets too hard and they ripped out their lungs and heart and guts, and now they're dead in the street. So going forward, they need to figure out a way to re-securitize all these bad debts. But the U.S. dollar itself is so loaded up with debts. Now, it's the basic currency behind $600 trillion in derivatives. It's the U.S. economy itself has $14 trillion in debt. They've got almost $2 trillion in budget deficit. They've got $60 trillion in other related debt off the balance sheet. So as far as a mechanism to carry the debt load, it's dead. It's a dead duck. And there's really no other place, no other country can handle this revolving almost quadrillion in debt. So Bank of International Settlements, which is the bank, central bank in Switzerland, is gearing up for a new reserve currency based on the special drawing right, which will be backed in part by gold, and it'll be basically an amalgam currency, a blended currency. China and Russia are behind the deal because it gives them greater flexibility in their own economies, the emerging economies.
Well, it draws them in. Apparently, the gold in the SDR, in the BIS, now that taken from many people think Portugal, this 346 tons of gold. Portugal did have 348 tons of gold. It could be that. So it draws these potential investors, Russia and China, into it, because right now, everything operates on a Ponzi scheme, and it's a pyramid scheme, same thing. And you need a new Ponzi scheme, don't you? You need early investors, people to come in. Feed the whole thing.
Well, the Ponzi scheme or pyramid scheme, you need the constant influx of people at the bottom of the pyramid, or everybody above on the pyramid falls apart and they lose out. So this is a way to create of course the base has to get wider and wider and wider. Yeah. And the U.S. was a huge wide base for the global Ponzi scheme, but now that is not, they're not able to load any more debt up on that base. So they've got to create a global base, a global world currency to replace the dollar. So the SDR will become that new unit of currency. It's going to be a blended currency. It'll have some gold as part of it. And the BIS is orchestrating it, and they're launching it now. It's actively traded. It's in the trading books now. It's being traded. It's happening right now. The U.S. dollar is being elbowed aside as the world reserve currency. What this means to the U.S. is that the Americans will be exposed to currency fluctuation for the first time since World War II, in a big way. And this means that the cheap gas, cheap food, cheap credit that they've enjoyed for so long is going to disappear, and their living standards will collapse, and they will no longer be in the first world.
With the 346 tons of gold that the BIS now has, that would mean the SDR is 12% backed by gold.
That's a right. Well, we've been talking about gold and as a reserve currency, and everyone says that there's not enough gold to make it a reserve currency without gold trading at $50,000 an ounce or some number like this. But we're not necessarily talking about a 100% gold-backed currency. Any fractionally backed currency, fractionally backed by gold, is going to be quantum leap forward from a currency that is backed by fiat and fractional reserve based on fraudulent accounting. At least with some component of the currency that is actual gold bullion, you have at least one part of it that you can account for and give a value to. I mean, it doesn't mean that there won't be plenty of room for scaling up the leverage on the back of the gold base, but it's still an improvement, and it's still a transition from the current model, which is backed entirely by fiat.
Yeah, but as Jim Rickards points out recently on his Twitter stream, is that, you know, the Roman Empire, it used to be an ounce of gold was an ounce of gold. And then by the end of the Roman Empire, it was only 5% gold, or, you know, 5% of the gold coin was gold. And, you know, this is how new empires start. Everybody has faith in it that because it's gold backed. And by the end, it'll have like a flake.
Yeah, that's right. No doubt. What it'll do to the price of gold bullion is going to drive it higher. You know, I mean, well, it won't get to $50,000 an ounce because it won't be a purely gold-backed currency, but it will easily get to $5,000 an ounce, or and it'll, on an intraday spike, probably get to the five figures, that is to say, 10,000 and above. But so this is why the price has been edging higher. It continues to trade higher. And going forward, those resource-based currencies like New Zealand and Australia and Canada will continue to outperform these currencies that have nothing behind them, like the U.S. dollar and the U.K. pound.
Mm-hmm. And an article on Zero Hedge, it's actually a cross post by Gordon T. Long, and he's talking about the fact that it was just a few years ago that the BIS basically was bought out by all the central banks, their member banks. Before that, it was just a purely private. Then it got bought out in this forced buyout, some weird situation that wasn't covered by the mainstream media. And in fact, some of the private owners of the BIS tried to sue to stop this buyout from happening. But this means, however, that Ben Bernanke is on the board of directors, and he would have known about these gold swaps. So they're participating in this. They understand what's going on. They understand that they're creating a new currency. So mm-hmm. whether or not it's just a thing to deceive the Chinese and Russians into participating in the next Ponzi scheme. Maybe it's an elaborate fraud in order to pretend that they have a solid currency for them, for the Russians and the Chinese to hand over their wealth.
Well, I think for the Chinese in particular, any exit strategy that they have for those $2 trillion in reserves, over $1 trillion U.S. dollars, yeah. or they get even any fractional piece of a gold coin, you know, they're happy to do it. Otherwise, they're at risk of imploding along with the rest of the global economy.
Yeah, well, that's true. And that's kind of it for this week's Truth About Markets.
That's going to do it for this episode of Truth About Markets News Daily with Max and Stacey. Until next time, this is Max and Stacey saying to you all in Christchurch, listening to RDU, the best radio station in the world. Bye, y'all!